What's the real difference between success and failure, between happiness and depression, between people who experience poverty and the pain they associate to not having choice, and those who have true wealth, emotional, social, and financial? Why is it that some people seem to have every reason why they could be happy, and yet they're still depressed and sad? Why are there other people who have every justification to be sad, yet they live this happy, joy-filled life? Those are pretty important questions for us to ask, and for the last 10 years of my life, I've been asking that question. The question is why? What makes up the difference in human behavior and emotion? Why do people behave and respond so differently? I believe the real answer is beliefs. That is, what we believe, the meaning that we feel certain will come from situations, determines how we're going to behave and what we're going to do. You know, oftentimes I've had the privilege and the ego stroke of someone saying to me, well, gosh, you're so successful. What's the difference between you now and when you lived in Venice? And I usually tell people, I say the difference is a sense of urgency. That when I lived there, I didn't have this sense of urgency. My major beliefs, notice, a sense of urgency comes from your desire to make something happen and your beliefs that you can. At that time, I didn't have a sense of urgency. Why? I didn't think anything I could do would make a big difference anyway. My belief was you could do everything right and it could still turn up wrong. And since I had that belief, I wouldn't give 100%. Why do that and then have the pain of failure? Think about it. All of a sudden, I changed my beliefs. My goals at that time, my compelling reasons, like we just recently worked on yours, my compelling reasons for working were, how could I do the least and get the most so I could retire? My goal was to retire. Figured I'll make enough money and I'll just retire. I want to do that by the time I'm 25. That was my goal. My goals and my beliefs, the reasons for doing things changed radically. And it became, how can I give the most? How can I contribute the most and enjoy the process? That's why I'm here right now. That one little belief change is the difference between who I was then and who I am now. There were many beliefs that changed along the way, obviously. But that was probably one of those critical ones, changing what's going on behind me. Hey, I got a question for you. Think about it. How hard would you really work if you absolutely knew? How hard would you work in this course to really master the stuff, to stay present, to take notes, to manage your state if you've been sitting for a while? How hard would you really work if you knew that by mastering the tools of influence, of persuasion, that you could literally create, be, do, have everything you want for the rest of your life? If you really believe that in your gut, how hard would you work? Question, how many cold calls would you make? How hard would you prospect? But how many cold calls would you make a day? How many hours would you work a day if you really, in your gut, believed that by making these massive number of calls in this next year, you'd earn all that you wanted to earn in terms of happiness, joy, and money. You'd earn over $1 million in personal income, seven figures. How many cold calls would you make if capital or money motivates you? My assumption is if you're in sales, it has some level of motivation for you. So $1 million, think about it. How hard would you work? And here's my point. We just finished working on the idea of creating some compelling reasons. Remember I told you that the difference between success and failure is a sense of urgency or compelling reasons. People who really succeed, it's not that they're more intelligent. I'm no more intelligent than anybody else around me. But I have been more successful in the endeavors of business than a lot of my associates, a lot of people that I learned with, a lot of people I studied with. Again, not because I was bright, not because I was great, but because I developed more reasons. I had more of a demand on myself. I had more of a sense of urgency. And all those things came from developing strong goals, but not only strong goals, but the belief that I really could get them and that there were enough reasons for me to get them. That's the difference, because lots of people set goals. So it's not enough to set the goals. You've got to get where you believe those goals will happen. Now, what do I mean by a belief? Well, let's think about it. A belief is nothing but a feeling of certainty about what something is going to mean to you. That's all a belief is. In other words, when you say, I believe something, you're saying, I feel pretty certain in my gut that this will mean something to me. Let me be even more specific. Do you recall earlier we said that everything people do, they do for reasons? So let's chunk that down for a second. I said to you that whatever people do, they're doing it out of their desire to achieve or avoid various states. Remember we said people have two targets, okay? One target is the states of pleasure. Let me turn this back around so it's the same as yesterday. Let's call these pain. You can read my writing here. And pleasure. In other words, there are certain emotional states we're trying to move away from. And there are certain emotional states that we want to move towards. Now, I said to you that everything we do for one of these two reasons. You recall, I think I gave you an example about like a woman putting on makeup in the morning. Why'd she do it? She did it for various reasons. And we talked about that the states we move towards or away from, we also call values, meaning that these are states that we value a lot. That's all values are. Values are valued states. And for some people, let's say the state of adventure, to use the example I used the other day, the state of adventure is more important than, if you go down their list of values, than, let's say, the state of security. What that means is, this thing they call adventure, this feeling, for them, feels much better than just this feeling they call security. So if they have to make a decision, what should I do? And they look at a situation, or what will this mean to me, and what should I do? They're going to look at it, and if they say, well, it'll probably mean I'll feel secure, but not adventurous, that will not be as an exciting a proposition for them as if they say, well, what would this mean? Well, it could mean adventure to me. They're going to be more motivated. Does that make sense so far? Now, the same thing is true on this side. For some people, let's say something like rejection. Whoa. Rejection. For them is something they would do almost anything to avoid that feeling. But as you go down their list and you get down to something like, let's say, inconvenience is something that for them is not as important. So if they have to make a decision that it could be inconvenient, one thing might be inconvenient, another thing might cause them to feel rejected. Which one are they going to avoid more? Clearly what? Rejection. So we talked about yesterday that if we want to influence people, we have to know what these are. And when you set goals yesterday, you set goals. And some of you I heard set goals like, well, I want a trip around the world. Now, what most salespeople think like, or how most people think, rather, salespeople and other people as well, is when we look at somebody's goal, you know what most of us do? We develop a belief about why we think they want that goal. So somebody might say, this guy would probably say, well, this guy wants a trip around the world because, I mean, think of the adventure. Does that make sense? That's the way people tend to think oftentimes. Not always, but oftentimes. If the person who's asking the question, why does a person want to go a trip around the world's number one value in life, let's say, is family, and acceptance, in other words, those are values or states they value most. For them, those have the most compelling feelings, the most strong emotions. And as you go down their list, they have something like adventure down here. What would you guess this person is going to think is the reason this person wants a trip around the world? They look at somebody else and somebody says, I want a trip around the world. The first thing they'll probably say is, oh, God, that'll be great. You're going to be able to connect with those people from all over the world. That'll be incredible. Think about that, you know, getting to know them and everything. This person's going, well, I was thinking more like, you know, being able to go down the rapids down there in this particular part of the country. I want to go to South America and go down the rapids. And they say, well, yeah, and think of the people you meet, all those tribes. And he goes, yeah, well, that's nice. Does this make sense to you? So the big question in life, the question if you want to motivate people, the big question is, why? We always want to know why people are doing things. Why is the question? That's the question. Why? It's not enough. If somebody says to me, I want a fast car that'll take me from 0 to 60 in 50 seconds, my question to them is, I say, that's phenomenal. So I agree with them. I'm curious, why? What is it about that you enjoy? And they go, well, I don't know. I enjoy it. It feels good. Okay. Or you say, well, are there other things in your life that you like also that are fast? They go, yeah, I like to have fastness. And so what I begin to do is find out a little bit behind them. Somebody says, I want a trip around the world. I don't assume I know why. I don't want to assume. I want to know why, which means I want to know what are their beliefs. What do they feel certain? They feel pretty certain that a trip around the world is going to give them. And then they'll begin to tell me. I feel certain that if I do that, it'll give me, let's say, adventure. Okay? And it'll also keep me from being bored. Maybe boredom is something they don't want to experience. So they think, God, by going this trip, I don't have to feel bored anymore, and I have adventure. I now know key elements in how to motivate them to do other things as well. Does that make sense? In other words, I know that if I'm going to motivate them to do things, that one of their hurts is probably what? Boredom. That one of the pleasures they want is probably what? Adventure, or in this person, let's say, family or acceptance. So the bottom line is, we need to know this about us. See, our values are great. They're the targets. But what you actually do in a given situation is not just based on your targets. It's based on your belief that if I do X, if I X, then Y will happen. So if I go on a trip, then I'll enjoy myself. You know, some people don't want to go on a trip around the world. Why would somebody not want to go on a trip around the world? The answer is they believe, God, if I go on a trip around the world, I'm going to have to schlep all this stuff. And plus, I'll probably get bit by a rattlesnake. And if I go on a trip around the world, I mean, I've done that once before, and it just, you know, it wasn't what it was cut out to be. I didn't know anybody. I couldn't speak the language. You know, the food wasn't any good. Couldn't find McDonald's. Right? So you get the idea of what I'm saying. What we want to know is, and the person this tape is about is you. You. See, we want to study other people, and I'm showing you this right now, but the person who we've got to really understand the core of is you. Because, see, you've got to find out what are your beliefs, because some of your beliefs, I would hazard a guess, are limiting you from going for things. See, I had an experience recently that was not real pleasurable. About a year ago, I had some partners in business, two of them. One of those particular partners was not 100% honest. In fact, he embezzled about $250,000. And he ran my company about $758,000 in debt. While I was working on the road doing seminars, literally 25 days, 28 days a month. It was a fairly intense experience. Fascinating is the word I now choose to use for it. But the point is that what happened for me was everyone around me came to me and said, Tony, you're a good guy, it's not your fault, and the company's going to go under. There's no possible way you're going to have to go bankrupt. So how do you want to get started? Now, what's interesting is I have a different set of organizing beliefs. And my belief is, I guess, this, that I have a belief that says there's always a way. That if you're committed, let me put it that way, if you're committed, then there's always a way to pull it off if you're 100% committed. Now, we all have a different idea of what committed means. Committed to me means you just do whatever it takes. I don't care what it is, there are no limits. Committed to other people is I'll try it a time or two and see what happens. And in less than a year, because of that one belief, instead of my focusing on the question of, well, how will we go bankrupt, the question changed. And the question mine was, okay, how do we make this thing work? How do we turn it around in spite of it all? What do we need to do? And by asking those questions, I got better answers. Does that make sense? The quality of your life, I will tell you right now, and you'll hear me say this often, the quality of your life comes down to the quality of the questions you ask yourself. Because there's an old phrase that says, ask and you shall what? That's right. And if you ask lousy questions, you will get lousy answers. If you say, how will I go bankrupt? You'll get answers. If you say, how can I turn this thing around in spite of it all and enjoy doing it? Then you're going to find out those answers as well if you keep asking the question. Now, the bottom line is beliefs. So beliefs are if-then. And when somebody comes and looks at your product, what they do is they immediately have this question that fires off in their mind, right here in the center of this diagram. There's this question, and the two questions they ask is, what is this going to what? Mean to me, and what should I what? Do. Those are the two critical questions that clients will ask. What is this going to mean to me? What should I do? And what they're going to do is, what does this mean to me? Will it mean pain or pleasure based on my what? Belief systems. In other words, what do I feel pretty certain about? Now, sometimes a customer does not have a clear belief about what it's going to mean to them because they've never tried your product before. So they don't have a belief yet. The reason they don't have a belief is they don't have enough experience. They don't have any reference experience for it. There's no reference in their brain, so they're not sure. So you're the only reference for convincing them. For example, if someone's never had a computer before and you want to market a computer to them, then they're not sure. They're in a state of uncertainty. So when they go, what is this going to mean to me? They're pretty uncomfortable. The reason is people don't like to not know. They like to feel certain about what's going to happen in their life. Don't you like that feeling? Do you like to be in a place where you're not sure what's happening? No, because it feels like you're not in control. So in selling to people, we want to know what are their targets, what are the states they want most, which we also call values, and we want to know what are their specific beliefs already about our product. The bottom line is I want you to think about finding out what people's beliefs are, and then what you've got to do is you've got to create a new possibility. You've got to create a way for them to be able to say, okay, if I purchase this, then it's going to mean more pleasure than pain. And the way you're going to do that is the way we've already taught you and the way we're going to break it down into 10 steps. But I want you to understand the basis behind this. Now, let's see if this is really true. Is what we do really the result of what we believe? Is that really the source? Well, let me ask you some questions. Let's have some fun questions for you. How about a question like, oh, no, let me ask you an intense question instead. Let me ask you a tense question, and that'll be fun for me. Would you be willing to murder an innocent person in order to stop hunger all around the world? People are starving of hunger because dies now, I think 40,000 people a day or something of that nature die every day of hunger. So The question is, would you be willing to murder an innocent person to stop hunger around the world, save all those lives? Yes or no? One person says, which person? Okay, that's interesting. So that person began to search their mind, and they said, would I be willing to do it? And they said, well, it'd probably be painful, except for certain people, it might be pleasurable. So he began to reevaluate, what would this mean? He's not sure what it'd mean. He's not sure what it means. It's not for certain pain for him. Now, he may have just been humorous, but for him to even think of that, his brain says, well, it may not be as painful as somebody I didn't like. Right? Maybe if it was Gaddafi, I might feel differently, some people think, you know, in recent days. Now, so that's one person. Somebody else, what do you say? Would you? Raise your hand if you'd be willing to murder an innocent person to stop hunger around the world and save all those lives. Raise your hand. Okay, quite a few. How many would absolutely not be willing to do that? How many are not sure? Interesting. Interesting. Well, the split, at least right now, is a little bit heavy towards not doing it, obviously, but quite a few of you willing to do it, and quite a few of you on the edge. So the difference is, if you're on the edge, you know what that says? You're not certain about what it's going to mean, pain or pleasure. You're not certain whether, in the end will justify the means. Does that make sense? So you don't have enough emotional reasons to do it. You're in that teeter-totter, you're right there in the middle, is what you are. You know, you got these emotional reasons why you should do it, because you could save 40,000 lives a day. And you got this other one, which is murdering someone is never something that's acceptable to you. And they're both compelling because they're both really intense emotions. And you're not sure. Other people's like, no problem, I'll murder them. Because, I mean, come on, 40,000 lives. Some people believe that their giant belief system here that they organize things with, that they feel certain about is, you ever see Star Trek? There's a place there where Spock says the value of the many surpasses the value of the one. Some people think that way. So they'd say, listen, one person. Some people say, yes, I would murder someone. Myself. Creative thinker. Right? They found a way. What they did is they searched their mind and said both ways would be painful. But if I did it, I would at least know I gave my life for something valuable. And even though I'm killing myself, it would create what? The pleasure of knowing my life had a sense of purpose. Isn't it interesting how people's brains work? It's rather fascinating to me, at least. I hope it is to you. Let me ask you another question. For an all-expense-paid trip for any place around the entire world, would you be willing to tear off the wings of a beautiful butterfly? Yes or no? Yes! You're a mean sucker, aren't you? Yeah, so raise your hand if you'd be willing to do it. For an all-expense trip, whoa, you guys are disappointing me here. you can't tell what my values are, can you? How many would absolutely not do it? Let me see a show of hands. Ah, yeah, there are the good souls in the room. Whose beliefs are those? Do we judge other people through our beliefs and values? You better believe it. And by the way, whose values are right? Mine. Our own, obviously. We always feel certain, or otherwise we wouldn't have those values. Now, in this room, most people here believe that they whip them off. Why? Whip them off, that's right. Why would you do that? It's just an insect. Interesting, okay. So what this person is saying it's just an insect, is they're saying, I associate to insects feelings that are not as strong as human beings. Isn't that true? That's the bottom line. Now, some people say there's no way. You know why? They believe that I should tell you, there are two kinds of beliefs, so you can follow me on this. There are beliefs I call global beliefs. Global beliefs are things like I am, people are, life is, insects are, right? Is, are, am are the words I use to describe global beliefs, okay? And global beliefs affect the way we look and interpret what things are going to mean. In advance, it determines. Well, a long time ago, we decided this is what it means, and we use that to make future evaluations. Like, for example, if you walked into a room, and you were in there, and you left your wallet or purse in the room, and you have this belief that says, Martians steal, okay? And sure enough, you leave the room, and you come back, and your wallet or purse is gone. And you notice that there are two Martians in the room. What immediately becomes the question in your mind that you're going to ask based on that belief? What would you guess it would be? That's right, which Martian took it? Not where did I leave my wallet, right? Not did somebody pick it up and put it in another place. Now, what if you believe that Martians are totally honest and so are all human beings and the room is only filled with Martians and human beings? And your global belief is Martians and humans are totally honest and capable of stealing. When you walk in the room and your purse or wallet is missing, what are you going to ask? Yeah, has anyone seen it? Where did I leave it? Where did somebody put it for me? You follow me? So when you walk in to meet a prospect, you're walking into, I call this a reference book. This is a giant book or file cabinet full of preconceived notions about what things will mean, don't you? Global beliefs. Salespeople are. Computers are. Right? They're too complicated. Right? Finances are too complicated. Insurance is negative. Buying a home is a big decision. Right? You know, making an investment in satellite communication is very intense. Using another printer is a pain. You know, having to change is tough. Those would all be global beliefs. You follow me? And so you cannot, in persuading a prospect, jump in. I shouldn't say you cannot. You can do anything. But it is probably better not to attack a person's beliefs, because people have different levels of beliefs. Some beliefs they're kind of like, they feel pretty certain about, and some beliefs they would give their life rather than change. Have you ever been in an argument with somebody when you attacked one of those beliefs? It can get rather intense, can it? So the general strategy in selling is, for me, Robin's sales system, I don't know about other people's, but my sales system is, find out what they want. In other words, find out who we're dealing with, and let's meet their needs by aligning with their beliefs and then redirecting. Somebody says to me, salesmen are dishonest. My response will be, no, they're not. I wouldn't say that. I'd say, you know what? Unfortunately, a lot of them are. And it totally tarnishes, you know, the idea of people like myself who really do care. That's why I don't even think of myself as a salesman. You know what I really am? I'm a CEO, a financial CEO. I'm here to help you manage those finances. If I was, for example, a stockbroker. So if you're a stockbroker, don't say, well, they say stockbrokers are dishonest. Don't go, no, they're not. Say, a lot of them are. And you know what? That's why I don't even think of myself that way. What I am is this, not one of those. See, that's the way to deal with things, not to fight them, not to tell them they're wrong. No one in this world wants to be made wrong. And if your style of selling is to try and show the client how they're wrong so you can now show them what's right, I guarantee you, you'll never make it into that group I call the 250. The 250 are the people that make $250,000 a year or more, or in their industry are considered to be the top. So it's not just economics, because in some industries you're not rewarded economically for how much you contribute. But in most of the selling industries, that's true, and that's why I use that criteria. But if you want to be in that top 1%, you've got to really make sure you align with the client's beliefs, not attack them. Is this making sense so far? Great. So one type of belief I call a global belief. Global beliefs. And global beliefs, you probably can't read any of this, but it makes me feel good to write it on the board. Global beliefs are the I am, life is, people are, butterflies are. Okay, and that's the belief that man used. The other beliefs I call rules. And rules are the ones where we use if then. If I this, then it will mean that. And the reason I call them rules is that's what they are. They help you to guide your decisions. If then. They're cause-effect belief systems. If I do this cause, then it will mean that. And that's the only reason somebody buys something anyway, isn't it? I mean, think about it. People buy simply because they want to get something emotionally. And so the question that's going on in mind is, what is this going to mean to me? And I mentioned this before, and I'll mention again, there's usually four or five questions about meaning that customers are asking. And how what they feel, their belief or their feeling of certainty about the answers to these four or five questions really will determine usually whether they'll buy or not. Number one belief they have to buy. They must believe absolutely that you have their best interests in mind. If they have any sense at all that you really don't care 100% about them, you're going to have a problem. No matter what you try and do, you're probably not going to be able to close the sale. Or even if you do, they're going to call back 15 minutes later and leave a message saying, what? I changed my mind. So we're going to make sure that in the 10 steps to sales mastery, you absolutely can answer that question where they believe it, where they feel certain that you really do care. And by the way, the only way you're going to convince them of that is if you really do. So I'm assuming that you've got that kind of integrity to start with. Number two question that people are going to ask is, what will this product mean to me? Will it really give me what I want? Now, here's where most salespeople fall out again, right? What do? They sell what they want the client to have, what they would want in their life. So they're an adventure person, and they go, God, boy, I'll tell you one thing. You take this trip around the world, you have the adventure of your life. Instead of finding out what they want, which maybe for them is connection, and they can say, God, you know, being around the world, connecting with people of all kinds of cultures, it just makes you feel incredible inside. That's different. So you've got to make sure you answer the question that where they feel, where they believe, they absolutely believe, they feel certain, that's what a belief is, they feel certain that buying your product will mean having their needs filled, having their wants filled, the want of pain they don't want to have anymore, and the want of pleasure that they now want to have as well. Because remember, you found out their wants, you stirred them up, made them hurt, and now you got to make sure they feel certain that by buying the product, it will mean the pain will go away and pleasure will be here. Number three, third key belief they've got to have is an answer to a question again. Remember, people are always evaluating. They're always asking questions. And if you can help them to evaluate the way you want, you can answer those questions, they're going to buy. The third one that they're going to be asking is, well, what, you know, is it worth it to me? Is it worth it? In other words, they'll start weighing, okay, yeah, it could mean to me pleasure and all those things, but what am I going to have to give up? Money, time, maybe some inconvenience while they install the new system in my company. Maybe I have to tell the other salesman I've been dealing with that I'm going to a new company and I'm not going to deal with them anymore. Do you know that's an objection sometimes, a hidden objection? They know your product is better. They know it'll give them more pleasure, but having to tell a guy they've been dealing with they're not going to use them anymore sometimes is enough to get them to not buy your product. So you got to be able to get them to believe that the negative consequences of buying, meaning the inconvenience, the capital, the time, the energy, the installation, the having to let go of a buyer they've dealt with, is not anywhere near as important as the benefits they're going to have now. So you got to believe it's worth it. And the way you do that, of course, is you make them hurt. You make them hurt even more. I'll give you a classic example. I'm dealing with a customer, and the customer says, you know, Tony, I'll tell you what, I really, really, really think your product, I really do, I agree with you, it's really incredible, but we've been dealing with this other company forever, and you know, you're a nice guy, but I just don't want to change. I don't argue with him, because what has he established for me? A very strong what? Belief and motive, but a belief. He feels certain that he should not change. So I don't want to fight him, I want to agree with him. I'll say, listen, I really envy your supplier. I mean, he obviously is in the kind of relationship with you that I'd like to have, that anybody would like to have. And he must be doing a darn good job. Do you mind if I just ask you two questions? Well, no. Let me ask you a question. What are the three things he's doing that really make you feel that way? What are the three of the best things he's doing for you? Well, guess what? He'll be happy to answer that. Well, he's doing this, he's doing that, he's doing that. Great. Now, you're saying, Tony, what you're doing is building up the other guy. Well, yes, I will never attack somebody. I will never attack the competition, and I will never attack somebody he feels good about. That would be stupid. That would be going totally against his beliefs. Plus, I don't think it has integrity based on my beliefs and values. In addition, though, now that he's done all this, all I've done is I've aligned with him. I'm agreeing with him. We're on the same side. Now what would I say? He's saying I've got no need. I'd say, well, what are three things that could be done better? Ah. Now he starts to say, well, what are three things that really could be improved upon, do you think? He starts to think. Now, that's a question he'd probably not ask. He now has to search his memory and look at things a new way. I'm getting him to refocus. He goes in there and searches around. He goes, well, we really should improve and need to improve on this with our supplier. And, well, there's this other thing, and there's this other one. What will my response be? I'll agree with him. I say, yeah, you're right. I mean, I can imagine all the consequences that must come from that not happening. What am I doing right now? I'm stirring up the what? Hurt. I'm disturbing the prospect. And all of a sudden, I'm saying, God, that's really too bad. I know he's doing a great job on those, but those things, man, if those continue to be left out, what will that mean to your company long term? And now the guy starts going, well, and what am I doing? I am creating a new what? Belief. And the way I'm creating a new belief is I'm asking questions, and I'm saying, God, not having this, what will that mean? That sounds like it would cost you this and cost you this. It'll create this pain, that pain, this pain, that pain. Pretty soon, this will mean pain. I finally get him to link that if he doesn't change, it'll mean what? More pain than pleasure. Remember what I told you earlier? I told you in a couple tapes back that if someone is going to buy, they must associate or link in their mind tremendous want. That is, they got to associate buying to being giving them tremendous pleasure and not buying to being painful. You've got to be building both of those if you want to be a professional salesperson, not just somebody who tries to pump people up and get the few people that just do things because they're excited or do things because they're motivated. You got to motivate them from both levels, the carrot and the stick. But you got to do it elegantly. You got to do it respectfully. And by the way, have I manipulated him? Have I made something up here? Have I done a bunch of closes? No, what I've done here is I have respected this man 100%, and I've helped him as a businessman to discover a problem. And that's what selling is. Finding a problem and then solving it. That's what you and I do. Getting someone to notice a hurt that maybe they weren't paying attention to, maybe the hurt was kind of hidden, and then healing it for them. That's what you and I do if we're professionals. So that's part of giving them a belief that, hey, if they don't buy, there's going to be pain. That's how you motivate somebody. There'll be pleasure by buying, and there'll be pain by not buying. Now I've got a prospect that's willing to listen, and now I may begin to change his belief. So the answer to his question of, well, will it be worth it? My answer is, what will the price be if you don't change? Oh, do you even really even have a choice? Can you honestly look at the situation and allow that to continue to happen and be an effective and intelligent businessman? You see the power of this. So that's the third question. A fourth question that people are going to ask, and it's an important question too, is the question of, well, justification, I guess. Maybe a better description of it than justification would be the question that people are asking is, well, what will other people think? What will they say? In other words, what will my buying this mean to my relationships with other people? And so let's say a gentleman is out shopping and he sees this particular car and he gets real excited about it. Or a lady's out shopping and she sees a beautiful outfit. She would love it. And she wants to get it. The want is really high, isn't it? She just really wants it, or he really wants the car. And what happens? By the way, I'm not being sexist. It could be the other way. She's buying the car and he's buying a suit. But the bottom line is that either way, whether or not the person will do it is, have they answered the question, how will other people respond? In other words, if that man thinks that he buys that car and comes home with it, his wife is going to be unbelievably upset. He's going to have lots of pain. It's not going to be worth the slight bit of pleasure of buying. Does that make sense? Or the opposite. The woman does the situation. She says, God, I want the dress, but God, you know, things are tight and everything else. Can't really justify it because he'll get upset. Or a man in an office and you're trying to sell him a new computer system, a new copying system, a new telecommunication system. And that man or that woman that you're trying to market to, sure enough, you're talking to her and she's the general manager and she certainly can make the decision, can't she? Or she's the vice president. But there's a problem. And that is, no matter who that person is, they're still thinking, well, God, you know, how will it affect other people? Now, some people have a belief it doesn't matter. What other people think doesn't matter, so they'll just do it anyway. But a large number of people want to believe that by doing this, people will still feel good about them. And that affects their decision making. So you need to make sure that in your sales presentation, you answer that question. Boy, by doing this, think about how it's going to impact your family. Or by doing this, think about your company at first. They might think it's a little weird, or they might think, you know, God, why are they bringing a new system in? But what will they feel about it long term, do you think? Don't tell them, ask them. See, if you tell somebody, they then have to evaluate, is that true? If they tell you, then it is true. So ask questions and lead people there. And I guess the last question that people are asking on an ongoing basis, and these aren't the only ones, but these are ones that at least pop in my head when I'm thinking about questions I want to answer in advance. And that last question, I guess, would be for me, would be, not only is it worth it, not only am I in a situation where I trust the person, meaning I'm thinking about how I buy, I trust the salesperson, I know that it's going to be worth the hassle and everything else. I know that people are going to feel good about it around me. I know it's going to really meet my needs. I guess the last thing for me I'd look at is, well, do I really need it now? And that's pretty important. That's why I created these two little funny little words, urban and lurban. Because I didn't say just find an emotional reason for people to buy. Urban is E-R-B-N, an emotional reason to buy now. Lurban, L-R-B-N, is a logical reason to buy now. So I want you to remember this. If a prospect does not have a reason to buy now, they won't. They won't. If they don't have an emotional reason to buy now, it'll probably be more accurate. They won't. In other words, if they don't have a big enough want, they're not going to follow through. So you got to make sure they have enough emotional reasons to buy now and just enough logic for them to justify it. Just enough logical reasons that now is a reason. There's a reason to buy now. If you don't do that, if they don't believe that they really need to do it now, or if they don't believe they really want it now strongly enough, they're going to have a hard time justifying buying. Now, do these five make sense to you? So we're going to talk later on about how to prepare. And I will come back and I'll go through these five again just for repetition's sake. But I want you to remember these. Every time you go in with a customer, think, I've got to get them to believe that, hey, I care. Where they feel certain I care. And I'm not here to manipulate them. I'm not here to take advantage. And if I can't meet their needs, I really will leave. I'll ask for referrals, because that's what I do, but I'm not going to try and push something on them that they don't really need. God, when a person believes that, you can't believe how many objections get handled immediately. You don't have to have all those closes back here to come back and nail them with, because most of those objections don't come up because they trust you. You also want to make sure, okay, they believe that there's really something here for them, that there's a benefit here for them that's really worth it, and that not getting it would be painful. So they got to believe it's really going to do what you say. So you got to make sure, how am I going to make sure they believe that? What are the ways that I can get them to feel certain about that? Third, You got to be thinking to yourself, okay, how am I going to make sure that they know it's worth it in terms of the effort, the money, or whatever else? And I will tell you this. The number one way that you convince someone of anything is by you being convinced. You cannot influence another human being unless you've been influenced. I love salespeople who say, God, I've got the greatest product in the world, and they're selling this particular product, and you go to their home, and they don't use it. I mean, and they wonder why they don't have great sales. Or somebody says, well, I really love our product, but I haven't bought it myself yet, but I'm going to buy it. See, if someone comes to work with me, one of the requirements is they've got to purchase all the things that we have. Because when I went to work in the personal development business, I went to work for a man named Jim Rohn, great personal development speaker, incredible man. And to join him, they said, great, you can join. It was so easy. I said, wow, I mean, I tried to sell them and stuff. They said, we want you. All you got to do is buy this and this and this and this, all these products, which at the time was like, I don't know, $2,000, something like that, $1,200, I think, was the initial payload. Now you got to picture me, a 17-year-old kid who was just out on his own, sleeping in his car, and they wanted $1,200. I got a little upset. I thought, they just want something from me. But you know what? They were brilliant. Because one, it took people who were committed to make that investment. And two, by my having to go out and figure out how to come up with $1,200 when my car cost $900, and I was sleeping in it literally, I was just out on my own, parked at 7-Eleven, for me to do that and go through that experience was incredible. It made me so strong in my ability to convince other people. When I sat down and said, I don't have the money, I go, that's no problem. And I meant it, because I said, look, I'm 17. I went to bank after bank after bank. I wasn't even legal, and I finally convinced somebody to loan me the money to go do this. So I know you can get it at 35 with some credit, even if you have lousy credit. And people could not tell me they couldn't do it, because I was so, what's the key word? Certain. I was so convinced. And as a result, when I went into this man's company, every human being I saw for the first month, every single person bought everything. If you believe strongly enough, if you care strongly enough, if you're impeccable in your level of certainty, I'm here to tell you that there are very few people who can escape your grasp, even if you don't know any closes. Because the strongest close in the world is your feelings. You gotta understand, selling is a transference of emotion. And that only comes, you can't give something to somebody that you don't already have. So you've got to build those five questions I told you about. You've got to build those into yourself before you start. You've got to believe those at such a deep level about the customer that, you know, no matter what objection they get up, it's like it bounces off you. You still keep charging, you know. You're here to make sure you give this to them. And if you're coming from that place, you can't believe what will happen to your selling. So I think what we're going to do is this. Let's stop the tape right now, and let's have you sit down, and I want you, just for a moment, to think about the answer to those five questions for you. That is, for you, why is it that the kind of people you call on, why is it that you know your product really, well, first of all, why do you care about the prospect? Now, why can people count on the fact that you're not going to take advantage of them? How is that true? What are the beliefs you have behind that? Let's go to the second one after that. Second one, what is it about your product? What are the advantages and benefits, and what will they mean to people? Because people don't buy benefits. They don't buy advantages. They buy what it's going to mean to them. And a benefit has got to have some meaning to them. If you just sell random benefits, it may not mean anything. It's like saying, God, you know, you'll have an adventure. That may be a benefit of a product, the adventure of it. But if they don't like adventure and what they want is security, you've got a problem. But what are some of the major benefits for you? What is your product giving you at a gut level so that you can transfer some of that feeling of certainty to somebody else if they have similar values? Third thing, I want you to write down, what are the beliefs you have? What is it you gives you certainty that those objections you usually hear, money and time, all that stuff, what is it that you feel makes it so much more worth that? Do you remember I told you there are three tools you have to influence people with? One is words. Two is your voice tonality, your voice qualities, your tempo, your timbre, the volume you use, the pace that you speak at. Three is how you use your body, your facial expressions, your gestures, body posture. All these things communicate, and most salespeople focus on words, which, do you remember the percentage? They represent what part of the influence process?
7%.
That's right, 7%. So if you want to be powerful, here's what most people do. They practice the words. So they learn in traditional selling, they learn a close. And they come in and they deliver the close, and they do it perfectly. They say all the right words, but it doesn't work. You want to know why it doesn't work? It doesn't work because they don't feel certain about what they're saying. They feel certain about the words, but they don't feel certain that it's really right. And that's why the person doesn't get convinced. That's why you're going to learn closing here. But no close can make up for you not believing and being certain that what you're giving the prospect is 10 times more valuable than what you're asking for in return. If you really believe that in your gut, there's no limit. So I want you to answer that question. Why is your product worth 10 times what you asked for in return in terms of money or time or effort? Okay? Fourthly, I want to make sure you answer the question strongly within yourself about your own products or services. How can that person justify doing this with the people around them? You need to help them to justify it. And how will it benefit the people around them? What are some ways that you're certain will benefit people around them? General things that consistently help the people around them. And sometimes it's by helping that person to have something, it puts them in a better state and makes them treat people around them better. There are lots of reasons. And lastly, make sure that you can think of reasons why they should do it now. Because I'll tell you something, in my own sales team, the people that go out and reach you and got you to be here, I tell them the most important thing they've got to do is get you to realize that this is something you need to do now. Because otherwise, if people can put things off, they will. Because people don't want to have to make a decision. They don't like that. They don't want to make heavy-duty decisions, and they don't want to commit time. They don't want to commit resources, because in the short term, it looks like pain. Because most people are short-term oriented, I would think. Would you agree with me on that? Yeah. So they look at the short term and they go, pain. They don't look at the long term, which could be massive pleasure. You have to be a long-term thinker to be successful. Hey, the Japanese are, and this is a gross generalization, but in business, they are kicking our tail. And the reason is, if you go talk to a Japanese businessman, they got a 100-year game plan, a century game plan. You go to the average businessman in America, and you'll be lucky to find a 5-year plan. In fact, usually it's, what are we going to do by the next quarter that's going to affect, you know, people who are invested money here in our company? And it's a challenge. It affects us. So what I tell people is, you got to show them how it's compelling now. You got to get someone to realize now is the time to do this, and if they don't do it now, it's going to hurt. Does that make sense? Because it will hurt. See, most people in life, my next book, tentatively titled The Niagara Syndrome, Are You Heading for the Edge? How to Take Control of Your Destiny, how to take control of your personal, emotional, social, and financial destiny. And what it's all about is that most people in life live their life, and life is like a river. We're moving on it, right? It's traveling. And what happens? This river's going along, and most people don't look up to see where is it going. And one day they end up 5 feet from Niagara Falls in a boat with no oars, and they go, oh shoot, it's a little late. See, so you know what the problem is? A persuader didn't come by and say, come here, I got to talk to you while you're still upstream. And say, you know where you're heading? This is very real. And make it real enough so that you put them 5 feet from Niagara so they're motivated. They feel the pain and want to change. That's really what you've got to do here. You've got to make sure there's a reason to do it now. So let's stop the tape and let's do some thinking. What are some of the beliefs that you already have? What are some beliefs you'd need to have in these areas in order to be really effective in being able to close people? Because if you don't have that certainty within you, you're not going to transfer it to anybody else. All right? What's the most important part of the selling process? Inevitably, when I ask that question of salespeople, I get the answer, closing. And as soon as I say that, I know they're not earning more than usually $50,000, $60,000 a year, oftentimes much less. And the reason I say that, and that's a pretty tough statement to make when most of us have been taught that closing is everything, the reason I say that is in interviewing the top persuaders in the world, literally, top communicators, people that are able to have the largest incomes, close the most number of sales, inevitably what they tell me is, no, the key answer to what's most important is rapport between you and a customer. That you have a relationship of responsiveness. That you feel connected with them and they feel connected with you. That they really trust you. If I was going to take one element, one emotion, I would say it's trust. You've got to be able to answer that question we talked about earlier in these tapes, and that is the first question that a prospect has in their mind is, whose interest do you have in mind? Do you really care about me, or are you just in it for your commission? And you got to make sure up front, real early in that presentation, this person really knows what you're really about, and it isn't a forced, yeah, I really like you, or it isn't a fake compliment where you just notice something that's obvious and say it, where you use blatant flattery. You've got to get yourself to the point where you walk in to see a prospect with a deep level of emotion like empathy, a deep caring emotion, a deep, I'm trying to think of a better word for you. I would say, I hate to sound corny, but almost a love for somebody. And you say, well, how can I do that with a stranger? It isn't easy. That's why most salespeople don't do very well. But I'm here to tell you that if you can really get a customer, somebody you're just meeting, to feel like you really sincerely care about them right from the very beginning, you can't believe the kind of impact that you can have. How do you go about doing that? Well, I think part of it is asking yourself better questions again. Part of it is thinking about what is it that you love about all human beings? No matter how harsh a person may seem to be, underneath that, there's always somebody there. There's always a diamond in the rough, if you can imagine what I'm speaking of. That is, I can think of some of the people that their first impression I had of the person was just, God, I can't believe this person. But inside, they're a little pussycat. There's somebody who just like had some tough times and they're in a tough state in their life at that time. They're dealing with a lot of problems. Sometimes the most harsh people are the people you need to have the most support of. And if you can be loving to somebody and caring to somebody who's a stranger, even when they treat you harshly, you induce reciprocation again. They will not forget it. If you walk into a place and somebody says, what do you want? And you say, I apologize. I certainly don't want to be disrespectful to you in any way. I just had an idea that I wanted to share with you about how you can increase your sales about 25%. And it's obvious that you don't want to hear about that right now. But if you did want to hear about it, when would you want me to talk to you? And what you're doing is offering them a new opportunity. See, oftentimes people say to me things like, well, I don't know the answer to that question. And I never argue with a prospect. You never want to argue with them. You always want to align with them. The number one aspect of persuasion is align with somebody and redirect them. And so that's why rapport is so important. So if somebody says to me something like, I don't know the answer to that question, I'll say, I can appreciate that. I know you don't know the answer. But if you did know, what would you probably say? And as simplistic as that sounds, somebody go from I don't know to, well, do-do-do-do. Because when you take the pressure off, when they no longer have to give you the right answer, many times they'll come up with the answer right away. The only reason they don't know the answer is because they're saying to themselves, I don't know the answer. So give people an opportunity by learning to use this languaging pattern of, well, I know you don't know, but if you did know. Or I know you don't want to do something now, but if you did, how would it feel? And what you're doing is you're aligning with the person, being on their side, being in rapport, and then redirecting them. The key, I guess, is if you really want to have long-term influence, you can get short-term influence just by impact. See, persuasion can be looked at in many ways. You can persuade somebody by demand. You can persuade somebody by threat. But if you want to influence someone long-term, the only way that's going to happen is if you really have their trust, if they really feel like you care about them personally. The same thing is true of our children as it is for the person that you're going to meet when you go make a sales call. If your child thinks that what you're doing right now, you enjoy when you're spanking them or being upset with them or scolding them verbally or however you discipline your children, if they don't think that you really care, you got a problem. Now, how do we get that to happen? Again, we start by thinking, well, what is it about this person that I really could like? What is it about this person, as soon as I meet them, that's special or unique? And by coming from that place, if you keep asking the question and you really sincerely want an answer, and you're not just doing it to manipulate, you usually come up with those kinds of answers. And caring sells. I got you to remember something, and that is that people buy from friends. If this person sits down with you and they feel like you're a friend, they will tell you things they won't tell anybody else. In fact, they'll even help you close the sale. What I tell most people when I do sales seminars is I say, look, people buy from friends even if the person they're buying from is a lousy salesperson. I mean, isn't it true? How many of you have ever had somebody be a lousy salesperson, but you liked them so darn much that you said, shh, no, don't do that. Here, close me this way. And you actually helped them. Have you done that? I know I've done it lots of times. I'll say, you know, you're going the wrong direction. You know, I'll help you. Do say this to me. I'll probably get excited. And sure enough, what happens is, but I'll do that for a friend. I will not do that for somebody who's coming in and trying to manipulate me into doing something. That's why as I keep saying the same message over and over again, because repetition is the mother of skill. I hope it'll sink in, not only in your head, but into your heart. That, as simplistic as it is, learning to be associated to these people can do incredible miracles for you in terms of your ability to persuade and influence. Again, you got to believe that you, in your heart, have their best interests in mind. And you got to believe in what you're selling 100% or none of this works. I'll give you a fun example of how caring has affected me. I went to Hawaii about a year and a half ago, I guess it was. I'd been on a real intense schedule, one of the most intense. I don't remember the exact number of days, but somewhere in the range of about 100 days, 110 days, and 110 seminars, rather, and about 125, 135 days. Very, very intense. And I was getting to that point where I was totally burning out, and my body was tense, and I had back problems, and my throat was sore, and I sounded horrible, and I got to that point where I'd like snap at people. And my life is not about that. And when that starts happening, I take a look and go, hey, what's this about? And I realize I'm just physically burnt out. My state is being affected. Has that ever happened to you? Where you're so intense and your body's so tensed up that you snap at people and it's not about them? I didn't want that to happen. So I called my wife up and I said, Beck, we need to go someplace. We need to go someplace where I'm not going to talk. She goes, where would that be? I said, let's go someplace where there are no humans. And she goes, where is that going to be? So I looked in this big giant world map. And I looked where we were, and I looked the furthest other side of the globe I could see, and I saw these little islands called Fiji. And I said, well, I've heard those little islands are really beautiful, and there's probably no humans there. Let's go there. So she says, okay. So she books this flight. And we're supposed to fly to Fiji. Now, that's a long flight. I think it's 12 hours, something like that. So, and she knows my body's already tense. I'm not going to probably like sitting for 12 hours. So she broke up the trip and let us fly to Hawaii first, spend a day there, and then continue our flight. Great idea. We always get first class seats, so we got lots of leg room, and I always get a bulkhead because I'm 6'8", and a bulkhead usually gives me just a little bit more room. In this aircraft, for some reason, the bulkhead is right up almost against me. So I'm all like this for about 5.5 hours from LA to there. And you can imagine the state I was in by the time I got there. So we get there and we get our bags and it's like, I'm all tensed up. We get outside and we've ordered a limousine. No limo there. We hang in there 15 minutes. No limo. 25 minutes. It's hot. It's humid. We're starting to perspire. Still no limo. After about 30 minutes, I have had it. I said, see, you can't trust anybody. Do you ever notice how you tend to generalize sometimes when you're upset? So sure enough, you know, she says, come on, honey, I know you're stressed. Just relax. He goes, there's another limo over there. I'll see if we can get him and if he'll work with us. So sure enough, she goes over, and being very good persuader she is, she gets him to leave where he is, come pop over us, because his people didn't show up. So we just made a trade. I began to think later, maybe he was the person to start with for us. But the bottom line is, here we are, and he pulls up. He doesn't just pull up and get out of his car, however. He opens the door, jumps out of his car, turns around, pops over, and says, hi, how you doing? Grabs our bags, throws them in, pops over here, throws them in, opens the door, and I'm thinking, what kind of drugs is this guy on? So sure enough, I think, oh, that's okay. I get in the car, and I think, okay, well, at least now I can sit down and relax, you know, stretch my legs out finally, you know, be with my wife, and So here I am all stretched out, starting to feel good, and all of a sudden, that doesn't last. Because all of a sudden, the little glass, you know, that separates the back from the front goes down. And this guy goes, so, how you doing today? I'm thinking, oh, God. And I want to be polite, so I said, I'm doing fine. But I try and, like, give him a little bit of a hint by my voice tone that I'm not quite as up as he is. Right? He doesn't catch it. He has no sensory acuity. He turns back and goes, isn't it a great day? And I'm going, yeah, it's a really great day. He says, I love days like this, don't you? And I'm going, yes, I love it. Thank you, you know. He said, you know what I love most about days like this? He said, well, first of all, have you been to Hawaii before? And he's talking 100 miles a minute. I'm going, yes, many, many times. I love it. I come here often. It's great. Thank you. He says, isn't it beautiful? And I'm like, yes, it's beautiful, right? He said, you know what I love most about Hawaii? I said, what? He said, people. People like you. And I'm thinking, oh, God. So I'm thinking, well, all right, I'm going to try and be nice, but I got to let this guy know. So I suddenly said, you know, I really need to kind of relax. He looks back at me and he keeps on talking though. But you know what was interesting? He was more committed to being in upstate than I was committed to being in a lousy state. And he began to infect me. You know? All of a sudden, we started talking and he asked me what I did. And I started talking about what I do. And I started talking about people and all the people involved. And he said, you're involved with that many people? It was hard to hear his values, wasn't it? Everything he said was people, people, people. He said, you're involved with that many people every day? You get to like see 1,000 people in a day? And I said, yeah. My voice has just gone up. Yeah. I thought, yeah, that's why am I leaving people? That's what I love most. Right? And all of a sudden I'm feeling pretty good, going, yeah, I'm a pretty lucky dude. And so we're talking and everything else, and I'm feeling really good. Now here's the interesting point. People love people who change their states. You gotta remember that. See, we all love people who change our states. Remember examples I've given you before? That is, the most successful people in our culture are people who have learned to change mass number of people's states. Entertainers are some of the most highly paid people in the world, aren't they? And that's because most people would rather be entertained than educated, unfortunately, and that shows up. But the bottom line is, we want a state change. And so the bottom line is, somebody who can do that for us gets paid very well. A Michael Jackson who can earn $15 million for 3 commercials. That's fairly powerful, because he is a state inducer, which is your goal. Think about it. Who is your friend? Who are the people you consider friends? Aren't they people that when you're around them, you feel better, you get a positive state change, and that's why you want to be around them? And they like being around you for the same reasons. Who are the people you don't like? People you avoid. People, because when you get around them, it changes your state also, but it makes it worse. You don't feel so good. The bottom line is, what you've got to realize and understand is that if you want something in your life, if you want to become somebody's friend, change your state. Don't you love people that are humorous? Don't you like being around them? Because they're good at changing your state. So that's what this man did, and immediately I liked him. That was number one reason. Number two reason was, I really felt like this guy was sincere and he really cared about me and my wife. He like cared about my family. He's the kind of person that if I had my kids with me on this trip, I would trust him to go off with him and spend time with him, you know, that he would be genuinely interested to go play in the park or go do something, you know, he's that kind of person. And he expressed it to me in many ways. But one way was, we're driving along, we're talking, everything else, you know, and we're about to get to the hotel, and he says, you know, Mr. Robbins, he said, you seem like a really incredible man. I said, well, gosh, thank you very much. You certainly are an incredible man. You've really helped me feel better. I was really burnt out. He said, yeah, I have to tell you, it did look a bit burnt out. And I thought, when did you get your first clue, right? And he says, you know, I'd like to do something for you and Mrs. Robbins. And I said, well, that's not necessary. He said, no, I really want to. He said, you know, as soon as you get to the hotel, you go up, unpack, shower, do whatever you want to do. I'll wait downstairs. But when you're done, I want to take you and Mrs. Robbins out to dinner at the best steakhouse in all of Hawaii. And I thought, God, that's pretty incredible. And I turned to him and I said, listen, I said, that is a phenomenal offer. I said, I really, really appreciate it. And I have to tell you that I can't accept. And I said, that's a little too generous on your part. But I do appreciate the intent that you've got behind it, and I appreciate the kind of love that you're putting out with it. He said, no, I really, really want to do it. I want to take you. I said, I really appreciate it, and I can't let you. He said, no, I've got to. I said, no, you can't, because I'm bigger than you are. And I try to tease him, right, and make him smile. And I said, besides that, my wife and I are vegetarians. So I said, we wouldn't be going to a steakhouse. He said, really? Me too. And I thought, I thought, it's just a setup, right? But it was true. And we started talking, and sure enough, he talked to me about how he lost, you know, 30 pounds, and I told him I lost 38 pounds, and how my life has so much more energy, and how everything had changed, and all this more rapport, more things in common. And so by the time we get to the hotel, it's now time to pay him and tip him. Now, are you going to tip a friend differently than somebody who hands you a bill and goes, by the way, the tip's not on there? And somebody does that to me, I usually think, and it's not going to be, you know? But I love to be able to give somebody more than they expect. When somebody expects something and they don't give good service, I'm not real thrilled. But in this case, he's a friend. So, you know, one of the reasons I've worked hard in my life to make money is the purpose for me for money is to create state changes in people, to create moments in my life and the people around me. So if I got money, I go, here, you know, I want to give it to them. See, that's real selling. Real selling is having people want to give you their money enthusiastically. Now that's selling. And he had done that. I'm taking all his money and he's going, no, I can't accept. I said, you must. He said, no, I can't. Sure enough, I said, you must. And I give him all this money. He's like, can't believe it. Now, the next night, I'm supposed to fly to Fiji. So I have to go to the airport. Am I going to look in the Yellow Pages and call some other limousine service? Or am I going to call my friend? Which one? I'm going to call my friend. Why would I call somebody I don't know when I could be with my friend Steve? Steve is his name. So sure enough, we make arrangements. He's going to pick us up. Now, the interesting thing is that the next day, let me tell you two things. One, I left out my favorite part of this experience. And that is, we're driving along, right, talking and so forth. And I said, well, how did you get in the limousine business? He said, well, I used to be a steward for Qantas Airlines, and they laid a bunch of us off because they left off some of the flights here. And he said, so I had to figure out what I was going to do. And he thought, well, I need to do something I would love. And he thought, what do I love most? And I said, let me guess, people. And he started laughing. He said, how'd you know? So how did that turn into a limo business, you know, working in a limousine business? He said, well, I figured if I drove a limousine, I could be with people all day long and talk to them constantly. And I thought, yeah, okay, that's clear. And so I said, well, you know, how long have you been working for this company? He said, well, this company is my company. And he smiled. I said, wow, congratulations. I said, how long did you have it? He said, well, about 2 months. I said, well, what did you do before that? He said, well, I worked for another limousine company. I said, how long did you do that? He said, well, about 2 months. I said, wow, you must have stashed some money aside, huh? I said, well, not exactly. He said, what happened was one day I was driving this limousine for this other company, and I picked these guys up at the airport, and I drove them around all day long, and they were looking to buy a hotel. And so sure enough, all day long, I was just being myself, you know, loving people, being with people, smiling, being happy, loving them. You know, they were great guys, and I really liked them, and I told them so. And then, you know, being happy, you know, don't worry. And so sure enough, what happens, he said, at the end of the day, they said, you know, you have made this the best day of our life. This has been incredible. We've had more fun today than we've had in years. You're incredible. You deserve your own limousine service. So they bought me this limousine. He said, aren't people great? True story. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, and I was like, look, is he making this up or something? He said, no, it's absolutely true. I said, well, who has the pink slip on the limousine? He said, I do. I said, God, that's amazing. I said, do you have to like pick them up, you know, once a day or something? He said, no, they don't even live here. They live in Boston. He said, they might come in once a month, but they never demand that I'm going to be there. But of course, I want to go pick them up because they're my friends. I guess. He said, you know what else they did? I said, what? He said, they gave me $25,000 to start my business so I could do it in style. Wasn't that incredible of them? How's that for a nice example of self-fulfilling prophecies? See, pretty amazing what people do if you just make a state change, if you just care. You know, there's some people that can make a major difference in your life, and you're going to bump into them if you make enough contacts and if you connect with enough people at the deepest level. The most successful salespeople I've found who are long-term players are people that have learned to enjoy themselves because they understand that selling is the process of making friends. If your whole life is about meeting prospects and closing sales, that's a pretty disassociated life, wouldn't you say? See, I believe that you and I are paid for one thing, to make friends. And the more deep friendships, not just, you know, skewed on the edge friends, but the more deep connections we make, the more deep friendships you and I create with people, the more money we'll make automatically. Because people buy from friends, and people buy from friends again and again and again and again. Because why would they want to buy from somebody else? You're the person they're going to come back to, just like I'm going to go back to the same limousine service because he's my buddy. I don't want to go to somebody else. I'd rather give him the business in a heartbeat than some stranger who's going to try and close me. Does that make sense to you? Now, some salespeople go, yeah, well, you make it sound so easy. I mean, come on. This is selling. There's a lot of rejection out there. People just say no to you and stuff. It's tough business. Listen, I got to tell you something. If you think this job you have is tough, you better take another look. In fact, all of you right now, I want to tell you something. You don't work for a living. You don't. And neither do I. You go, oh yeah, easy for you to say. I work for a living. No, you don't. I'll tell you what. I'll give you the test. Try it with me, won't you? Lift up your hands right now. Lift them up. Turn them and face them towards you and look and see. Do you work for a living? I doubt it. What do? You have anyone's dream as a life. You have the dream of you get paid to make friends. And if you don't make friends, if all you make are prospects or contacts or a few customers, then you'll do okay. But if you make deep friendships, I mean, that's what my life's about. I hope that through this experience, you and I become friends, even though I may not have met you personally yet. And I hope someday I'll get to, and you'll be able to say, hey, you know, you have that feeling with me. I want that with you. I hope, you know, sometimes when you say something like that, people go, oh, I don't know how real that is. It's real for me. I hope it's real for you. But take a look at what are ways that I can get myself to care more about strangers? Because I know some people say, well, a lot of those strangers you meet, they're pretty mean out there. They're pretty rough. They're pretty outrageous. They can be totally harsh. I got to tell you something. It's just not true. There are maybe two, maybe three really harsh, mean, sinister people in this whole world. Maybe two or three. Now, it's true they move around a lot and you're liable to bump into them. But there's only two or three. Most people are basically good. And you need to find that good inside of them. Go for it. So that's number one, and that's called caring, and it's pretty simple, but it's something you better remember. Every time you get in for being in front of a prospect, think about what you care. So I'm talking here, I'm thinking about what is it about these people that I care about, even if I haven't met them, so they feel that connection. Second key, give effective compliments. One of the quickest ways to bond with people is to really appeal to what's really important to them, and they want to feel like they're important. They want to feel that they're cared for. They want to feel like you see good in them. All of us do. I don't care how successful a person is, and I don't care how unsuccessful a person is in terms of emotions, spirituality, physical well-being, or physical beauty, or money, or anything. We all want to be appreciated. And if you're the kind of person who gives effective compliments, you can't believe what that does. Now, when I say effective compliments, I do not mean flattery. And I can tell you right now a simple way to make absolutely certain that when you give a compliment, it's not taken as flattery. It's real simple. It's a three-step process. Step number one is state the compliment. That is, tell them the compliment. Tell them something that you really, really like about them, and don't say anything you don't really feel. If you say something you don't feel, instantly it'll be clear to them that it's flattery, and it's not going to work. In fact, it'll work against you, because now they can see what you're trying to do is manipulate. Two, after you state with feeling what you really believe to be true about this person or this situation, second key is you must justify it. If you don't justify a compliment, people, number one, don't get to feel your compliment because they can't justify, they push it aside and just say you're being nice or you're manipulating me. So you got to justify it. So the way you justify it is you say, because. The reason I say that is because. So you give him a compliment, and you say, the reason I say that is because. You say, you know, you're one of the most attentive people that I've ever met. I mean, you talk about focus. You're incredible. The reason I say that is every time I look over at you, I notice you've got your notebook right there and you're writing. You're one of the few people I see doing that all the time. Now it's a justified compliment, and they really get to receive the good you're trying to give. Third key to being effective in giving compliments is immediately ask a question. What is it that you do that makes you so effective that way? What is it that you do? I'm curious. I mean, what allows you to focus like that? So now they don't just have to feel uncomfortable, right? So have you ever had that happen to you? Somebody gives you a compliment. They come and say, God, you're the best I've ever seen. You're phenomenal. Now, if they don't back that up with anything, you kind of go, well, thank you. But if they say, you're phenomenal because you do this and this and this, and they justify it by complimenting your actions or your behavior or something you've done, that has more power, doesn't it? But if on top of that they say, you might still feel a little uncomfortable, like, you know, you really appreciate it, but, you know, you're being flattered and, you know, it's not what you're used to. It's not what you want. You know, you want to compliment them. Usually induces reciprocation, doesn't it? But in addition, if you ask them a question, it makes it less uncomfortable for them. Say, what is it? How do you do that? And now you've even complimented them more because you really get to learn something. Two things happen. It shows you really do care. You really are interested. It makes them think about it. It makes it more real for them. And three, you get to learn something, hopefully. See, my idea of compliments is an opportunity for me to express love to somebody or caring to a stranger in a way that's acceptable while I simultaneously get to learn something, hopefully. So those would be three important keys to have in making those compliments. Now, a couple of notes. Number one, one of the best ways to give compliments that very few people really utilize is give third-party compliments. Now, the other day I was calling a gentleman up who owns a big satellite television organization all across the United States, and we're considering developing a satellite company of our own. And so I don't know this man, and I want to find out all kinds of things about the satellite business for our own research. Now, I could potentially be a competitor. But what I did was I found out as much as I could. I prepared in advance. Step number one, I prepared. I found everything I could about this man. I called some people that I knew had some association with him, and the question I asked them was, what's great about this guy? Because I want to make sure I like him before anything starts. I said, what do you like about this guy? What's great about this guy? Tell me something about it. What are his values about? And I heard things like, well, he's incredibly successful as a businessman, incredibly bright. He is absolutely about integrity. This guy, if he will keep his word with you. And he knows how to play and have fun, and he's got a great family. I said, well, gosh, I have no values in common with him then, right? I mean, those are all my values. So all of a sudden, immediately, I feel like I know this guy before I even call him. So I'm feeling great. So I'm prepared. It's easy to turn on because I can't wait to meet the guy. I have no call reluctance. Call reluctance comes because you don't know who you're talking to and you don't know what benefit you're going to have or what benefit you're going to be able to give. So I'm also, by the way, preparing how I can be totally honest with him about what I want to know and give him some value so he wants, so he'll reciprocate. What can I do to give him so he'll give me information that I want to know and to do it elegantly and honestly? So sure enough, I'm prepared. I turn on. What do I do next? I got to make contact. I get on the telephone. I use my way to get through his gatekeeper and get to him directly. Now I'm speaking to him directly. I've done everything right up until now. All I got to do now is connect with him. And the way I connect with him is I say, listen, you know, before I called you, because I know your time is so valuable, immediately I'm giving him the honest knowing and feeling of, I'm not going to waste his time. One of the questions that, if you recall from our telephone talk, one of the questions people have is, are you going to waste my time? Because I want to make sure I didn't waste any of your time on the phone when I finally got through to you, I did a little research on you. And I said, I'm really impressed, and I was sincere. Everyone I talked to said four things about you. They said you were one of the most successful business people they knew. They said that you had absolute total integrity, that you were the kind of person that not only knew how to work, but you knew how to play. I heard him giggle when I said that. Immediately got him. And I said, and you're an incredible family man. And those are all my values too, so I can't wait to connect with you here. And I appreciate you're just taking a minute to chat with me. Let me tell you what it's about. Wham! Interesting, immediately there. I said, you know, and I asked him, I'm curious, and I asked him questions about what's made you successful. And I told him what I'm calling about. I said, I could be a potential competitor someday, but I'm calling to find out what you're doing so that I can make some decisions. So maybe I don't have to do that, but I'd like to know if you'd be willing to. And if in any way you feel like I'm prying into your business, please tell me to shut up because that is not my intent. I want to be 100% respectful. After all that, guess what? I give him a reputation to live up to with the compliments. I let him know that other people feel good about him, which is even better than maybe me in some cases because he doesn't know me. But hearing that all these people say things about that I took the time to find out about him before I called, that I acknowledged his time's value, think of all the things that were induced there in just a couple minute conversation, and my voice and my heart is really open. And if he would have said, no, I'm not going to tell you, I'd be prepared to go, okay, that's fine. That's absolute, you're right, and you know, I just want to at least try and connect with you. Coming from that place, then many times will also turn him around, but I didn't have to go to that place. So make it a habit to give compliments. Make it a habit. Not a habit that's on automatic pilot where you don't think about it. A habit where you are consistently looking for the good in people that you can acknowledge It'll make you appreciate them more. It'll make you the kind of person that people appreciate. And also, you'll start getting compliments too. And I know that probably would really bother you to have people care about you and appreciate you on an ongoing basis. But if you could deal with it, remember the law of reciprocation. Whatever you put out is going to come back, and it'll come back manyfold. I also would say to you, it's really excellent to give compliments yourself, third party. Meaning, give compliments to other people about someone. See, if you compliment I complimented Harvey McKay here. It's a very sincere compliment. He's a really neat friend of mine, neat guy, and I want to promote what he's doing. I want it to get even bigger. And so I give him that compliment, and what happens is I know that it'll get back to him as my friend. That's great. I want that to happen. And I want other people to know how great I feel about him. So I can accomplish multiple things in that process. Does that make sense to you? See, give compliments about other people, and you can't believe what happens. You know how when you say something not so good about somebody, how it always comes back to haunt you? Why not just always say good things about people and have that come back to haunt you in a positive way? And the last thing I guess I could say to you is that don't compliment the obvious. If you compliment the obvious, the compliment is not appreciated. It usually will revert against you. You want to be in a position where your compliments create a state change in people. That's really what we're going for, isn't it? And I would also say to you that make sure that when you're done complimenting that, or you're done with a meeting, that you immediately send a note of compliment, a note of thanks. That's one of the things that good salespeople do. Tommy Hopkins is excellent in making sure the salespeople he trains always send a note. One of the things I think he does that's really class about his operation, he demands that people send a note. And I would like to make the same demand on you. I'd like to have you really make sure that after you've made a contact with somebody, even if it didn't work out, that you send them a note, a thank you note. And in that note, maybe you can induce some reciprocation, or maybe you can just at least make that person feel better that day. Your job and my job is to be healers. Our job is find hurts, heal them. And after we've healed them, continue to heal them, make that person feel better about themselves. The more people you can make feel good about themselves, the better you're going to do overall in your life. Plus, again, you'll feel like a giver. See, if you know when you're going to meet people that you're not just giving your product, that you're giving them a chance to really feel better about themselves, and you're giving service, that's what you got to believe. Because otherwise, you and I both know that there are a lot of products out there that aren't that different. Isn't that true? Like, what's the difference between you and somebody else when you're maybe, let's say, in real estate, and you can offer the same exact properties at the same exact price? What's the difference? The only difference is what else you can give them. The service, the caring, the focus, the preparation, the professionalism. So you are the difference in selling. You know, so if you're going to be the difference, what you've got to do is think about being a giver by trying to give much more than just the sale, much more than just the product. Give them a state change. Give them a chance to build up the self-image and self-esteem that they deserve to have. So what I'm going to do is we're going to stop the tape right now, and we're going to have you actually work at creating some ways to be able to care about strangers, and also some ways to create some compliments, so that you're carrying a bag of compliments with you. You can dig down in there and find just the right compliment that really supports this person sincerely. So let's take a few moments and do that right now.
This program is continued on the next cassette.